Ball in Play 2, presented by DraftKings, kicks off on May 5th. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to catch Game 1. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code WAREHOUSE. That's promo code WAREHOUSE only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.
Welcome to Bleeding Blue, a show about the New York Football Giants and its history. My name is Justin Penick, alongside one of my best friends in the entire world, Nikki Snacks. And Snacks, it's the second to last time that I'm going to be saying that for this offseason. Next week is going to be our final episode of the offseason. We'll have a special announcement next week, too. Snacks, how are you, my friend? Today we're talking about the 2007 America's Game.
Yes, we are. I'm doing great. Feeling good. Very upset that Bleeding Blue is coming to an end this off season. We're almost through the whole off season, but we did it again. We did a lot of great stuff, a lot of in-person stuff, which was our goal. Unfortunately, we were unable to do that this week, but, doesn't mean the show is not going to be great. The 07 America's Game, New York Giants, the greatest cinematic piece of art in the history of cinematic history.
Why? Tell me why.
I mean, how is it not? One, the visuals, the interviews, the purpose, everything combined into one, Justin. This was the greatest Super Bowl run in NFL history, and how they captured it with two men that you can argue that are on the Mount Rushmore of New York Giants, and Strahan and Eli. One who you can argue is the greatest coach in NFL history, in Giants history, all coming together in one unison. How they did it and how they had the narration, the storylines, everything put into one. It was absolute gold. It was art. I have watched it a million times. I've cried a million times. It's the greatest form of art in cinematic history.
Now that I've rewatched all four, we only talked about three, and then we talked about 2011 America's Game on Talking Giants.
Yes, we did, with Robert Skinner.
Yeah, with Robert. And now that I've watched all four this offseason, I've rewatched them, I can say that 2007 is the best one.
It's the best one, and it's the most meaningful. I mean, this was, of the four Super Bowls, this is the best one, obviously, just because of the, you know, the circumstances and everything like that. And
Strahan is also electric.
He is so damn good.
Strahan is electric.
He's so damn good.
And it's so funny because during one of his stomp you out speeches, he's like, I'm not good at much, but I know I'm pretty as a motherfucker or something, something like that. Yeah. He's like, I know I'm good at playing football. It's like, well, it's funny that, you know, he's really, really good at entertaining and he's really, really good behind TV.
And, yeah. You know. And when you think about it, I mean, I'm sure this
makes sense.
It does make sense, and this is probably, I would say, a couple months after, so he definitely did spots on Good Morning America, all the Regis, whatever he was doing after that. But post-retirement, this has got to be his biggest project, if you think about it.
Yeah.
That's a lot of time that went into it, and he just absolutely shined. You knew right away that this man was going to be all world in front of a camera, a national audience that's not on a football field. So,
The funniest moment. Tell me about the funniest moment in London. Where he was retelling London.
Oh, this is my favorite part. So we're in London. We're playing the Dolphins, and Eli scrambles left, and he's probably on what, the 15-yard line.
It's probably still is his longest rushing touchdown of his career.
It has to be.
And he beats Jason Taylor.
He beats Jason Taylor to the edge, and they cut to Strahan. They go, I look up, I take a sip of my Gatorade cup. And as I'm taking a sip, or I'm putting my hand out, he says something like, I'm putting the cup up to my lips and I'm watching Eli run. And I'm drinking it and I'm drinking it and I'm drinking it. Something of that nature, meaning how slow Eli was.
He puts it down. He gets another cup.
He puts it down. He gets another cup, and I'm drinking it, and I'm drinking. And Eli's still running. And
Eli's only
films,
2 yards down.
Eli's only 2 yards. And why? Another reason why this is the greatest piece of art ever is they're showing that clip with no sound and in like slow motion, and you just see Strahan, and he's like. It's absolutely hysterical. It always cracks me up every single time. The big smile. But yeah, that's got to be Eli's most athletic play ever. I'm not even counting the Super Bowl when he escaped that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just toughness. But
when they were showing also, like when they were describing Eli as this stoic, nothing can bother him type of guy, and Strahan is just like,
Empty
at the camera.
Well, no, he goes, I'm pumping everybody up in the locker room. At one point, I forget which game, I'm pumping everybody up in the locker room, you know, rallying them up. Everybody's yelling, screaming. Then I look over, I go to Eli, and he's just. And Strahan does it. He just goes, he's.
Yeah, it was fucking hilarious.
He imitates Eli's persona. He just goes, and there's Eli, good old Eli.
And that's part of what America's Game does, is the dichotomy. The dichotomy between different emotions, different types of things. So at the start of it, it always starts off like good, and then it gets bad. I think this 07 one, it just started out. Well, no, it started out with Coughlin saying, if you're a half-ass guy, excuse guy, that doesn't sound like somebody whose priority it is to be the best that they can be. So that was the opening scene here. So it's like tough, hard-nosed Coughlin, whereas I know 86-87 America's Game, it starts out with the Giants winning the NFL championships. 2011 America's Game starts off with winning the 2007 Super Bowl. So basically, it gives you a dichotomy of emotions. And then what this scene was with the whole Strahan stoic Eli face. Michael Strahan, stomp you out. That's how Michael Strahan gets ready for a game. This is how Eli Manning gets ready for a game, and then just nothing. So that's what I love about, you know, America's Game in general, but especially this one. It kind of painted the duality of emotions so well.
And the two personalities that are completely opposite. And I know it's at the end, and I'll say it now because we're talking about the dichotomy of both personalities. And Strahan, my favorite, he goes, I don't go around telling a lot of people I love them. But I love Eli Manning.
Yeah.
And he's got like this big smile with the gap in his tooth. And then they show them hugging after this. It's just, it's something that's so special where you got, and that's why football is so great too, because those two guys, one's the leader of the defense. He's been there 13 years, for whatever, how long it's been. 14 years, I guess, at that point. He was drafted in 93 and that was 07. And you have Eli, who's in his third, fourth season. And they are the two polar opposites, yet they were the ones tasked with leading both of their respective sides of the ball. And you don't see that until it all really comes together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And you had Coughlin too, who Strahan said about Coughlin. I could not imagine, you know, if you were to tell me after the 04 season that I'd be playing for him for more than one season, you know, you said that you'd be crazy. So
and Strahan flat out says in America's Game, he goes, we couldn't stand Coach Coughlin.
Yep.
And when he goes, I don't think I'd ever play for anybody else. So that, and we have talked about the transformation of Tom Coughlin from a hard ass disciplinarian to a soft father-like figure to them. And maybe we kind of start with the Strahan piece here, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a little bit of a segue. Strahan was, he missed all the training camp.
He was fined $200,000, and he said, if I knew that I could be fined $200,000,
I would have never done training camp. Yeah, but this is the off season where Coughlin really started showing his, you know,
his caring side.
His caring side. Sorry, I just got a weird email.
Love that.
And that he took them out bowling. He goes, "We're not practicing today. We're going bowling." And Strahan's like, "They went bowling." What, so who is this man?
Yeah.
So it's funny to me when Strahan, like we said, was just an absolute superstar, and in the way he talks about how much he hated Coughlin in the beginning to how he talks about him at the end and the embrace that they had, you know, when they won the Super Bowl and they're on that little float on the field. Just very special.
I feel like we all forget, or maybe it was even, I don't know. I don't think it was downplayed at the time. I was literally like 10 years old, so I wasn't following the ins and outs of the Giants beat and stuff like that. But I feel like in history and in hindsight, it's downplayed probably how close Strahan was to retiring and not even coming back for that 07 season.
Yeah, no, and he talks about it. He goes, he really just didn't want to play.
Yeah.
He didn't have the heart for it. And
especially for a rebuilding team, which he kind of said that.
In so many words, yeah.
It felt, no, he said rebuilding in America's Game. He said
he said the word rebuilding?
Yeah, he did. He said it just felt like a sort of rebuilding team. And especially like if Coughlin's out and if Eli's out and the media gets their way after 06 and if 07 doesn't go according to plan, I mean, that is kind of what was, you know, maybe not Eli, but definitely Tom Coughlin. So,
yeah. And I mean, can you blame Strahan?
No.
He had a Hall of Fame career way well before that.
And one year of success in 2000. And, yeah, you know, really, 2002, yeah. I'm sure, really fucking Burns killed all ass. Those guys.
Yeah.
You know, and also having the turmoil. That 2006 season, which I actually, in hindsight, knowing what we know about doing the show, reading If These Walls Could Talk, you know, just talking so much Giants history these past two off seasons. I kind of wish that 2007 America's Game looked a little bit more at how crazy that 2006 season was between Shockey, Plaxico Burress, like Matthias Kiwanuka, like all the aftermath after that Tennessee yep. game. Tiki Barber, they did talk about Tiki Barber. I wish that they looked at how kind of wild the state of the football team was and the state of the locker room was. So here's what I'm going to ask you.
Okay. Well, real quick, that's a really good point because that 2006 was complete disarray.
It was nuts. Like yeah. it was not.
And they almost beat Philly in a playoff game.
It was a bad yeah. situation.
Yeah.
Especially when you include Tiki Barber and some of the things that he said and he did. You know, retiring, you know, saying that basically his heart's not in it, retiring in the middle of the season, bashing his teammates, coaches in the middle of the season. I'm going to let you tell that story. But before we bash Tiki Barber a little bit more, what he said about Eli Manning and Tom Coughlin on NBC before the season, do you, it's a shit dirtbag thing to do, but he is a media member. And was he entirely wrong? Because hearing what Strahan had to say about why he wanted to retire and why he was thinking about retirement, was Tiki Barber entirely wrong when saying that Eli Manning didn't have full grasp and full control of the team?
And that he
needed to earn it. And that's why he earned Michael Strahan's respect.
Yeah. So if I'm taking a step back and thinking about it logically, I mean, you had a quarterback in two of his first three seasons go to the playoffs.
Yes.
Did you have a, and you had a coach that literally built up an expansion team that went to an AFC championship game in like year two. And he won a division title, went to a playoffs year before in a year of disarray.
Yeah. 11-5 and 8-8. Too.
11-5. Yeah. So, and they were like 5-2 and then, you know, 6-10, obviously in 2004, but with the rookie quarterback.
Yeah. Line. Kurt Warner. Yeah.
Kurt. Yeah. That was never sustainable. That team wasn't very good yet.
They did start off well with
Kurt Warner. Start off like 5-2.
Yeah.
But I don't want to say it's completely wrong because Eli does need to take charge. And even though that he was never that guy, even later on in his career when he was an established Super Bowl MVP and everything like that, did he really have a fighting chance when you have a, who I love and every Giant fan loves, a Jeremy Shockey that's just bitching at him all game because he's not throwing the ball? You have an egomaniac like Plax who needs the ball. You have Tiki Barber, who is an egomaniac. Like, that is just such a toxic, toxic, toxic environment to be in for a quarterback that's been in the league for 3 years.
Yeah.
I understand what have they done? Saying. What have they done? Exactly. Exactly. And I get what he's trying to say, but I think he's deflecting a lot of blame onto Eli when, you know, you were the face of that offense for 6 years prior to Eli being there. Where were you as a leader? You quit in midseason.
Yeah.
I'm retiring after the year. Who does that?
And also saying, like, they talked about it in America's Game, saying that, like, his heart's not in it and stuff like that.
Yeah. And people come out when I say quitting scumbag. He's a quitting scumbag. I'm sorry. He quit. In his prime, he quit. Sure, he was, what, 31, whatever. But he had finally become probably the best running back in football. Maybe not named LaDainian Tomlinson, but he was that damn good.
Yeah, especially when he fixed the fumbles.
And who did he bitch at? Who did he bitch at after he retired?
Tom Coughlin.
And who fixed his fumbles?
Tom Coughlin.
Yeah, right. So does anything he says hold water to me? No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Because when he left and Shockey got hurt, who took over that team, that offense?
Eli.
Eli did. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you have those personalities like they did, and yeah, I get it. The quarterback should oversee it. Have you watched the emotion that Jeremy Shockey played with and how crazy he was and how miserable it made Eli look because he's force-feeding him the ball when he's not even open? And why do you think Eli, when he went on Cam Newton's podcast in a two-minute drill, said he would rather Kevin Boss than Jeremy Shockey?
Yeah.
Come on. So, no. What Eli said, what Tiki said, sure, in a sense, there's probably some truth to it. But when you dig deeper, no, he's a fucking idiot and he's wrong.
Yeah, because part of me was thinking about what Tiki said and then hearing what Michael Strahan had to say about his decision on whether he wanted to come back or not, which a lot of it I'm sure had to do with Tom Coughlin. But also
say more Tom than you.
But also just hearing about how Strahan talked about the progression of Eli Manning, it's almost like Eli needed to earn respect, which is wild when you do look at the circumstance of, yes, they went 11-5, they went 8-8. Yeah. You know, Eli threw interceptions. Yes, he had dumb mistakes and he made dumb decisions. Yes, the Giants offense. Well, the Giants offense in 05 was a top 10 scoring offense, yes, but I digress. I mean, it was great running game. You know, I that was Jacobs's rookie year. Tiki Barber had a really good year. But you know, Plaxico's first year as a Giant, but neither here nor there. Kind of wild that it was like Eli needed to earn this respect, not just of media and fans, which that's a given, but of like the teammates. Kind of want, just because he's ho-hum. But if he was more brash, maybe he wouldn't have needed to earn that respect, which I think is a wild, wild dynamic, which again, it goes off of that 2006 season, which was just so fucking crazy.
Yeah, and I love that you brought the 06 season up because I remember the 06 season very well. Even as a young guy, I was probably 14 years old. I still remember that being just an absolute shit show. And the fact that you had two guys in Tiki and Strahan who were, I guess, the longest tenure Giants at the time and, you know, two leaders of the team, maybe they just weren't, you know, receptive of a mute quarterback from Mississippi.
Especially having the name Manning.
Yeah, too. Exactly. And expecting, you know, okay, why isn't this guy leading us to where we need to go? So I get it in that sense, but I don't know. You didn't really give him much of a chance. He won you, helped win you a division, helped get you in a playoff game, helped you almost win that playoff game. I don't know. I think a lot of that was more frustration on their end that they were about to walk into the sunset, not being winners, especially both being on a team that was dominant in 2000 and getting thrashed in the Super Bowl. And then, you know, 4 years later, they're kind of in a full rebuild, drafting a quarterback that early or that high. And I don't know. I think it's a lot more frustration than it was an Eli thing.
But it was Eli's response that gave him the brownie points in the locker room, kind of sticking
when
it
he
to
fired
Tiki.
Back at Tiki. Yep.
Yeah. Sticking it like, hey, Tiki didn't have heart. You know, there's a lot of things that he could say about Tiki, and then the nice little joke at the end. I'm glad that Tiki's off to like a strong start in his media career, something like that.
Yeah, so. And he brings up announcing like his retirement mid-year.
Yes,
I didn't see your leadership when you were announcing your retirement mid-year. So,
which that was unlike anything. Like looking back on Eli's entire career, that was unlike anything that I've heard Eli Manning say. Especially from the early part of his career, because he threw some jabs in at the front office towards the latter part of his career.
Yeah, which was well deserved. But to another player like that,
yeah,
that's crazy. Yeah. I mean, like everybody remembers the elite question Michael Kay asked and him answering it and backing it up. But his response to Tiki before that season was just otherworldly.
Yeah.
That was a man growing up in front of your eyes.
Yep. Where do you want to go to next?
Yeah, so I think we mixed in Tiki with the Strahan. We talked a lot about Strahan. Let's talk a little about Coach Coughlin, because we don't have to get into it again about how that was the offseason where he changed his ways and became a father figure and a lot softer on the guys, still had his strict rules and everything like that. But they finally saw that softer side to him that they wanted to play for. However, after the 06 season, John Mara needed to be convinced to retain Coach Coughlin, even after back-to-back playoff appearances in only 3 years at the helm. He had to be convinced.
Yeah.
And I know John Mara has said before, and they sent him back to Coughlin's like, I don't know how I survived it, really. Like, that was something that he really had to sell hard. Like, you know, Johnny Cochran sold OJ getting out of that murder.
Mm.
And, I mean, we're lucky he did, because
I know that reference.
That's one of the few that you probably do know. That's why I kept it there. But it really, he fought for his job. He did not think it was, he, and Coughlin says it all the time, fire the coach, fire the quarterback. Like, it's like his famous line.
Fire the coaches, fire the players.
And, he said it this past year. Eddie Lyle's jersey retirement. Fire the coaches, fire the players.
It's his famous line. But it after 06, that was a real thing. Maybe not so much Eli, but definitely Coughlin.
Yeah, I'm 100%.
They may not have thought he was the right guy, but Coughlin made the changes. And, you know, he fought for his job and he won it.
And not only, like, so we talk about the, you know, firm, honest, demanding as, like, his pillars, but also he adding caring to it.
Yes.
So we all know that, but he wanted to have fun this year. Like, and he wanted to have fun this year with his guys and with his players. So that's the noble part.
And I think his direct quote was, he's like, I'm going into the season. If this is going to be my last season, I want to have fun with it.
Yeah.
And he did. And like we were talking about the bowling story in training camp. You think Tom Coughlin wants to miss football practice in training camp?
And he was eating the burger, like literally jumping from training camp to the Super Bowl. He was eating, they went to In-N-Out Burger. Which I honestly, well, I guess it is a West Coast thing. I thought it was just a California thing. I guess it's just a West Coast thing. They went to In-N-Out Burger in Arizona, and Strahan, again, Strahan, just a perfect illustrator of just greasy, stories, capturing stories. Meaty. He's usually like one of those guys to put the napkin or to put a towel around his shirt, and you know, just get all formal, ready to eat something. No, they showed, and this is, oh, I wanted to say this about just how beautiful this America's game was. They did a great job of incorporating like footage that was shot from the players on whether it was the handheld cell phones or their camcorders, whatever. And it looked vintage. It looked cool. You know, it's not just shot from an iPhone or something like that. So it was really, really cool that they were able to integrate shots like Tom Coughlin eating an In-N-Out burger. When Sam Madison was in London, just saying, what up, mate, to like, or that was Australian. Just
people on the street.
Random people on the
Jacobs
street.
Jacobs was out there. Well, yeah, yeah.
Can I also talk about it? Because I want to, the beauty of America's game.
Okay, yes, because we were talking about the greasy burger that he was eating, and they capture it so perfectly. Yes. And I forget who's recording it, but they like zoom in on him, and it's
you, well, you hear Strahan's voice. He's like doing a narration of, that's Tom Coughlin
in real
eating
time.
A greasy burger.
Yeah.
So that was great. We got a ring in the plane, showing Eli in the black tie with the white shirt when they were dressing up to the funeral. It's either going to be the Giants funeral or it's going to be the Patriots funeral that they dress in all
black.
Eli
just didn't want to wear all black.
Yeah, but they, you know, they were filming. They showed like shot film of like Eli on the plane with like his headphones. What else?
There's a ton.
But the way that they were able to integrate it, just it's awesome.
Yeah, I love the narrations behind everything, because it goes from like in the beginning bad when they're getting blown out by the Cowboys and the Packers, and Strahan's like, why did I come back for this? then it gets fun. They get on that winning streak and they're in the London, which is great. And they have the little rough patch again. So it's like misery to we're having a blast to love. Yep. If that makes sense. Like where like it all comes to fruition. Strahan, I love Eli Manning. I never want to play for anybody but Coach Coughlin. And then you see, I think you tweeted it out today, which I guess is Thursday, where it's like, this will never not make me emotional. And Eli's like this with the hat on.
I cried.
Yeah, I know.
I had to really hone myself in when I was rewatching that. Yeah.
And I love when Coach Coughlin brings up that Jerry Jones had given all his players 2 tickets to the NFC Championship.
And he says, well, before the game,
he goes, I didn't want to bring it. He said something like,
I didn't want to make a big deal of it,
but
I made
know.
Sure that I told the players.
Yeah.
And then after the game, during the post-game celebration, he's like, don't tell the media this, but don't worry, Jerry's sending over 2 tickets for everybody. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Just like so perfectly played. So perfectly played.
I love that Jerry Jones did that. I really fucking love that Jerry Jones did that.
It fueled him. It fueled him.
Thank you. Thank you, Jerry Jones.
Another great tidbit was like Strahan said he was sitting with OC and Tuck. They were in the cafeteria when Brady said, we're only going to score 17 points. Ha, 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 ha. I think Pierce was there too. And they're all looking at each other like, oh yeah? Okay.
Love that.
All right.
And it's funny because it's actually like Plaxico started that.
He did.
But the Giants were the one to like take offense off of the response. So I'm like, okay, whatever works, sure.
Well, I mean, think about it though. Think about it. He made a prediction, which I mean, that doesn't get talked about enough, Plexico's prediction. One, it was pretty spot on.
17-14, yeah. 23-17 he predicted.
He said 23-17. One, it's almost very spot on. Two, that's a guarantee. We talk about Messier's guarantee, the Rangers. Why do we not talk more about Plexico's? Maybe because he didn't say the words guarantee, but he gave a definitive score.
Yeah, he did.
It really does not get talked about a lot.
No.
If at all, ever. The only clip that gets talked about is Brady saying we're only going to score 17 points.
That is true.
Points.
Like the Brady response clip gets talked about more than Plaxico's actual prediction, which prompted the response.
Correct. And Plaxico was in his visor. I remember him saying, like, it just doesn't make sense why that doesn't get talked about a lot.
It's very true.
I don't know.
It's very true.
It fueled them. So what do I got to bitch about? One thing I don't remember. I really do remember America's Game. I want to bring up one play that I know we've talked about before. But one play to me that is just so game changing in all the playoffs. Do you remember Antonio Pierce's his tackle on that screenplay?
Yeah, Ryan Grant. They didn't talk about that in America's Game.
They didn't, but they should have.
Yeah, there's only so much, like I said, like I would have loved if they brought up 2006. Like there's only so much that you could talk about.
Yeah, I get it, but that to me, that is one of the great defensive plays in Giants history.
Yeah, they
he was gone. Justin, he was gone.
They loved talking about Al Harris versus Plaxico Burress.
And Burris,
there was a line.
Burris pointing at the sideline, he can't cover me.
There was a line. Al Harris must be cold because he's been undressed by Plaxico Burress.
Yeah, Burris, fuck him. All game.
Which I thought because of how cold it was, that was fucking hilarious.
it's a very good line. It's a very strong line.
Yeah.
I love the still shots of Coughlin's breath, like the smoke coming out of Coughlin's breath. And his face is red as my hair.
Just the whole series of events that they had for that NFC Championship game.
Right.
The music and shots after Tynes hits the field goal, slow and emotional. There's other shots in America's Game. Like in 2011 America's Game, there are, like when Ahmad Bradshaw runs over the Jets and Victor Cruz goes for 99 yards, that's like tough and it's like in-your-face music. But this in 2007... Slow, emotional, like just the accumulation of, you know, 18 years of a franchise of, you know, a Super Bowl drought, you know, and then just so much turmoil that this own, you know, Eli had to go through, Strahan, Tom Coughlin, that they finally they're getting there.
Obviously those are the three guys that were always going to do the narrations. And to me, they all had just stories in and themselves coming into the year. in the middle of the year, everything. And they all depicted it perfect. And another funny story, because we were just talking about the Green Bay game, that I love when Eli talks about his wife, Abby, not sitting in the stands.
I'm so glad you're bringing this up, because I learned something about Eli Manning, but go ahead.
No, I think it's funny. He goes, I'm not superstitious, but I'm a little stitious.
And you want to know what? Season 4 of The Office premiered September of 2007. That is when season 4 is when Michael Scott says, I'm not superstitious, but I'm a little stitious. So I tried to determine, I was like, did The Office take that from Eli Manning and then make it Michael Scott? No, I think Eli Manning,
the other way around. Yes.
I think Eli Manning was an avid Office watcher, and he quoted Michael Scott before it was cool to quote Michael Scott like it is right now.
Correct. And Eli's definitely got that dry sense of humor that The Office has, that dumb humor that The Office has. So it was just perfect.
And he was a big prankster. So he must have fucking loved Jim.
Oh, yeah. Him is probably his favorite character. I love it. It's just like one of those things. It's like, bless you. Jesus Christ. Don't ever do that again. He's saying to Abby, his wife, and Kate, like, it's negative 30 degrees, but you have to sit in the stands. You can't sit in the booth.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, after the game, I'm looking around, and she was not in the stands. She was in the booth. She was in the booth with the rest of the Manning clan.
Eli Manning, for how cool, calm, and collected he is, he is superstitious. It's not that he's a little stitious. Yeah. He talked about when they played Dallas, was this 07 or 11, Snacks?
Tell me.
I think it was 07. When they played Dallas, that he always it is Dallas, because this was the old stadium, not the new stadium. He always had to look to the left scoreboard when he was sitting on the bench. When he was watching the defense, he had to look at the left scoreboard. He would get up and he would celebrate if something good happened. He would talk to some teammates, but then when the defense was on the field and when plays were happening, he would sit down and he would look to the left scoreboard.
Wow.
2011. Yep. He kept the poker chip around.
You just took the words right out of my mouth. Yep.
Eli Manning is a superstitious person.
Oh, without question. But he's only a little stitious, though.
No, he's full on superstitious.
No, he is. And you know what? I love that. That's why me and him have so much in common. Besides the good looks and the charm and, you know, the humor.
It's arguably what makes him most human. I think I have found the thing that makes Eli Manning the most relatable. Is that he's superstitious? Yes.
Yeah, you could probably say that. That's pretty fair. But overall, this America's Game in and itself, it's incredible.
Yes.
It truly is. The stories and the transformations of these guys and how they really came together as one unit is awesome. It really is awesome. And a draft class that much hated Jerry Reese nowadays, a draft class that was, you know, doesn't really get talked about enough in the actual movie, but was unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely.
All the contributors. Seventh round pick of Mont Bradshaw winning a game in Buffalo to secure a wild card. Kevin Boss, 45-yard scamper down the middle in the Super Bowl.
Steve Smith during the Super Bowl.
Oh, God. That third down.
Yeah.
Like, just everybody contributed. Who was our first round pick that year? Was that Aaron Ross?
Yes.
Starting cornerback. He didn't do anything that was egregious.
Yeah.
So just an overall great class that needs to be talked about a little bit more. And how vital they were to our success for years to come, too.
Yep.
If you think about it.
And one final note.
Tell me.
I thought more about the helmet catch for the first time in a long time.
Like, yeah, we didn't even bring that up, which is my favorite part.
I thought long and hard about it, because again, America's Game does such a great job of breaking it down. They put Bob Papa's call and not Joe Buck's call.
And Bob Papa, real quick, I'm sorry. Bob Papa says Tyree wide open down the middle. Tyree was not wide open, but go ahead.
I like the energy that he brings.
The energy is great, yes, and Joe Buck's is not.
Yeah,
but he was not wide open.
He was not wide open. So here is the thought that I had, and I'm just going to write this down. I'm just going to read this out as I wrote it down. The helmet catch is the most improbable and least likely play to ever repeat itself, and also the most unique play in NFL history. Like, think about that play.
Yeah, I know the play.
It is the most improbable,
okay,
least likely to ever repeat,
yes,
and the most unique play in NFL history, maybe besides Franco Harris and the Immaculate Reception.
Unique, I may give to the Immaculate Reception.
Because it was two. Well, this play, the helmet catch with Eli and Tyree, isn't just the helmet catch. It's also Eli. It's two parts. It's an improbable escape.
It's the escape and then the catch. And then the catch. Overall play, yeah, yeah. I get what you're saying.
But like, think about like.
No,
like
it's a great point. It's never going to be replicated ever.
How many NFL plays are run in a given weekend, in a given year? That play will never, ever be repeated again.
Never.
Eli Manning sort of Mario Manningham could be repeated by somebody. And you could argue.
Franco Harris can too.
There's a, you know, the San Antonio Holmes touchdown catch. Like, that is just as good of a throw and catch scenario as Eli Manning to Mario Manningham in 2011. You can make an argument.
You can.
We're a Giants history podcast, and we're not going to say that.
No, we're not. Eli's better than Ben.
Yeah. So that's my point.
It's a great one. I'm glad you, like, broke it down that way, too. Like, most improbable, most unique, everything like that, because it really is. Because there's two parts. And Eli says, like, in the movie, he goes, I was thinking about just dumping it off to Chris Snee, who was standing right in front of him.
And Coughlin and Strahan rip him a new asshole for throwing in the middle of the field.
Right. And they're like, no, what are you doing?
Because I'm sure he's done that plenty of times before.
Oh, yeah.
And he's never ended well.
Yeah. And if you look back at it and they show it in slow motion, they really talk about it. I forget the referee's name, so I'm not going to say it. But he was very close to calling that play dead.
Yes.
Very close. And in theory, in today's NFL,
it would.
That play would be called dead.
100%. Yeah.
So, you know, kudos to that referee. I want to say Carey it was. Either way, just an unbelievable, unbelievable play that, you're right, is never going to be replicated ever. And I know that some guys have caught the ball on their helmet since then, but they have never jumped up like that.
No. I mean, that was legit just like
he was standing
a rebound.
There.
I mean, that was like a rebound.
Yes. He was standing still like this in the middle of the field. He wasn't like going back or running and catching the ball like that. He was standing here and just jumped up and caught it.
Yep.
And Eli's escaping, which the one time that unbelievable offensive line fails him. That unbelievable offensive line fails him the one time, and he gets out of it.
Yeah.
He bails them out. They bailed him out plenty of times. Just such an unbelievable moment. The best moment in our fan, well, for me at least.
Yeah. I think it's the best play and the best moment in franchise history. Absolutely.
And I think you can argue it's the best play in NFL history.
Yeah.
So. And we're fortunate enough to have witnessed it as fans.
Do you have anything else for us?
Yeah, you want me to tell the tiki story?
No.
Let's save it.
Let's save it.
Yeah,
I agree. That'll be a good. That'll be a good next week.
I was just going to say because that we did really good there. I don't want to. I don't want to end off on a bad note.
All right, people. We thank you for listening. I'm going to do this a bunch next week, but. Thank you for listening to us kind of like for the last 2 years. We're final episode of the off season is going to be next week, but it's going to be a total of 48 episodes the last 2 years that we have covered just on Giants history. And I think we did a really good job of, you know, kind of going back to the 80s and the 90s, even the 2000 year. The early 2000s, even when, you know, sometimes it wasn't that fun, 2002 BBVCR has done an awesome job kind of coming on here and talking about that. We even had remember Alex Zeldin who wrote a TV script for a pilot on Ron Dane and Tiki Barber being a crime fighting duo and Trey Junkin was the villain. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have talked so much.
We've had some fun.
We have talked so much over the last 2 years. So, even if you're behind on some, there's the playlist, there's two different playlists. on our YouTube. So go check those out and binge them. So we'll see you next week for one more final time this offseason. Keep on bleeding blue and snacks.
Fuck Tiki Barber.
Ball in Play 2, presented by DraftKings, kicks off on May 5th. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to catch Game 1. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code WAREHOUSE. That's promo code WAREHOUSE, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.